This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Next weekend, we celebrate Father's Day, and we're starting early with a question. Did you follow your father into his career? A new study reports that daughters are catching up with sons in this respect. About 20% of women born in the mid-1970s now share their father's occupation. There are advantages: advice, connections, a feeling of solidarity. And downsides: living in somebody else's shadow, suspicions that your success may not be entirely your own. If this is your story, we want to hear from you. Why did you choose to follow in your father's footsteps or not? Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, what makes a bad movie good? A new documentary by a former child actor who starred in the immortal Troll 2. But first, following in your father's footsteps. And let me begin by noting that Neil J. Conan III did not. My father and grandfather were both internists who went to the same college before going on to med school. I have a sister who's a nurse, but my father's other kids, his namesake in particular, did not go into the family business. With us here in Studio 3A is Josh Ammerman, the son and grandson of neurosurgeons, who's now an associate at Washington Neurological Associates. Josh, nice of you to be with us today.
Nice to be here.
What led you to decide to follow in your father's footsteps?
The decision to become a neurosurgeon was two-pronged. One, I enjoyed science, I enjoyed medicine, and I looked all around to find some reason not to become a neurosurgeon, to find something else to do to make sure I was making the right decision. And I enjoyed it more than any other other medical disciplines. As you alluded to during your introduction, there are the issues of, am I going to be successful in this field because of my own skills, my own merit, or am I going to be successful because others are going to afford me opportunities because of who I am? Mm-hmm. And that is something that I certainly considered and dealt with before making this decision.
And your dad was a big wheel in the same hospital systems that you work in.
Yes.
And you see his name, he passed a couple of years ago, but he's still a presence.
He certainly is. He's a presence every day when I walk into my office, a presence when I walk through my hospitals, and most importantly, a presence when I talk to patients who were, some of them, patients of my grandfather's, patients of my father's, and now patients of mine. And I'm reminded on an almost daily basis of the impact that they had on their patients, and it is that desire that I think drove me to ultimately follow in their footsteps.
Was there a moment, was there a light bulb moment when you said, this is what I'm going to do?
Actually, there is. If you want the true story, I came home from college freshman year and sat down in my dad's office, and he said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I'm thinking about this, that, maybe medicine, maybe I'll be a neurosurgeon. And he looked at me and he said, if you don't do a little bit better, you're not going to be. And at that point, I realized that if this was something I wanted to pursue, I needed to be aggressive about it.
To be aggressive, in other words, pursuing your studies and set out actively to do it. It's not something you could that would just fall into your lap.
Absolutely not. And as anybody who has followed in the footsteps of a parent would likely tell you, you need to work harder than the average guy or gal. You need to put in more hours, put in more studies so that you can ensure, at least in my case, so that I could ensure that the results were my own and my successes were because of what I was able to do, not because of what was handed to me by him.
And do you worry that there are some who will always say, well, he only got ahead because of his father and his grandfather?
Do I worry? Yes. Do I know that, in fact, I've gotten where I've gotten because I am good at what I do and have worked hard to get there? I feel comfortable with that.
Did you ever talk with your father about his decision to follow in his father's footsteps?
Yes. The specific issue of joining my dad in practice, I remember my father telling me one of the reasons he went into neurosurgery and ultimately joined his father in practice, you don't necessarily have to practice together, and I know physicians, father, sons specifically, who did not, was because he wanted to develop a new kind of relationship with his father, a different relationship with his father. Neurosurgery is a field of medicine that places great demands on your time. My dad, for example, was never a little league coach. And for those reasons, one of the things that I was looking forward to was an opportunity to spend time with him that I maybe didn't have when I was a kid.
A relationship where you are very much equals.
Correct. Absolutely. The father-son relationship, at least from the parent-child standpoint, is a very unequal relationship. The relationship from partners over time, one does look for equality.
Did you ever operate with your father?
On a number of occasions, and they're some of my happiest memories.
Really? Was it nervous the first time you went in there?
Not nervous for me. It may have been nervous for him. I have a wonderful photograph of my dad, myself, and my brother, who's also a neurosurgeon, in the operating room together. And it's something I look at and smile each time I see it.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. We're talking about following in your father's footsteps, or not. 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Erica's on the line calling from Sacramento.
Hi, good morning.
Hello, Erica. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm good.
I actually followed my father's footsteps. He was a Vietnam veteran, and he did his 25 years in the military. And in the family, of course, all the men went in, and I'm the only female who went into the military after my father.
And how did that work out for you?
It worked out in the long run beautifully. I went into the Navy, and I did 4 years in the Navy, and then I did 6 years in the Air Force Reserves.
And did you run into people? The military is obviously a very big organization, but did you run into people who knew your dad?
Unfortunately, because he was in the Army, no. So I was in the Navy and the Air Force. So we actually, you know, we compared stories. He was only alive long enough for me to, you know, see my third year, and then he passed after that.
And did he see this as somehow, well, how did he see this, that you decided to follow in his steps?
He was very honored, and oddly enough, he expected it to be my brother, but it ended up being me.
And I could tell from the way you're telling the story, I don't think there's any regrets there.
Oh, not at all. Not at all.
And if you had a kid, would you recommend that he or she might want to think about the military?
I do have a son. We've talked about it. He's kind of on the fence about it. He's more focused on going to college. But, you know, if in the event, I also told him that there's the advantage of having the military pay for college. You know, so whichever way he wants to go, he said he's, you know, open for it.
Well, Erica, thanks very much, and we'll be thinking of your dad this coming Sunday.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go next to Greg. Greg with us from Miami.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I did not follow my father's footsteps, mainly because I got fired from the family business.
What did you do?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not permitted to comment. Well, the short answer is nothing, but I was kind of falsely accused, kind of got a raw deal, but there was always concerns about nepotism in the business, and I was kind of made the example that there's no nepotism when the boss actually fires you, when your dad is the boss and he fires you.
This could lead to some difficulties come Thanksgiving.
Well, you know what? I'll be honest. It actually improved our relationship.
Really?
Yeah, we're actually closer than ever.
In part because, you obviously feel that this dismissal was unfair.
Yeah, and in his defense, my supervisor actually told me that in those management meetings, he was a champion for alternatives. Is there anything else we can do other than fire him? And I was told because of legal counsel they received, they were told just to cut me loose.
That's interesting, too. Can you tell us what the business was, the field?
It was just, you know, it was a catalog business, you know, call in order of different kinds of, you know, books and, you know, music, things like that.
Interesting. And do you regret that this happened? Do you wish you were still in the same business as your dad?
Well, looking back, it's given me lots of opportunity to do other things. So, you know, maybe a blessing in disguise, maybe even though a blessing in disguise, just not handled like it should have been.
Greg, thanks very much for the call, and good luck come Sunday.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Josh, I wanted to ask you, you have a brother who is also a neurosurgeon.
Correct.
And he's older or younger?
Younger.
And did he, I assume, went through the same kind of questioning that you did?
He, I'm sure, did, and of course he had the added weight of not only following Grandpa, Dad, but also Big Brother. not an easy decision. I think he's made the right one. I'm looking forward to working with him in the future. But I think the decision was made easier for him and was also made easier for me by the fact that my dad loved what he did. He loved what he did. He came home and told wonderful stories of patients he'd taken care of, interesting experiences. And when your parents tell you they like what they do, it's a heck of a lot easier to follow in their footsteps. If they come home and complain about work every day, it's not going to be particularly appealing.
Let's talk with Lauren. Lauren with us from Moorhead City in North Carolina.
Hi.
Hi, Lauren.
Hi. Wow, this is awesome. I just wanted to say that my dad did not have the opportunity to go to a university or graduate high school, and he became a mechanic at the age of 17. And fortunately for me, I was able to be first-generation college kid, and I went to school to become a mechanical engineer. Which is what he would have done if he had the opportunity to go to school.
So not necessarily into your father's footsteps, but following your father's ambitions.
Yes, exactly. And I feel very fortunate that I was given that opportunity, and he is very much proud of me, and I am of him.
And do you, when you get together, do you talk theory and design things together?
Yes, actually we do. We make things like Stirling engines. That was one project that we did together. Fabricated it, you know, bought materials, things like that. And I try not to go too in-depth because he doesn't have the theory or the education. So he kind of gets lost with, you know, the math behind it all. But I try as best as I can to keep it as informal and informative at the same time.
I bet he's still got a few things to teach you, though, on the practical level.
Oh, of course. He's got all the common sense and I've got the book sense, he says.
Maybe you ought to start a business together, Lauren.
Maybe.
Thanks very much for the call. It's a nice story.
All right, thanks. Have a good day.
We're talking about following in your father's footsteps. We want to hear from fathers and their children. If this is your story, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Jeb and George Bush, Winton and Branford Marsalis, Bonnie Raitt, all followed in the footsteps of their fathers. So did Leila Ali. We'll talk with her in just a moment. Josh Ammerman is with us, one of a line of neurosurgeons in his family. He practices at Washington Neurological Associates in Washington, D.C. Is this your story? Why did you choose to follow in your father's footsteps or not? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can join the conversation on our website, too. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Leila Ali joins us now by phone from her home in California. She followed in her father's footsteps into the boxing ring as a professional, and it's good to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thank you. Happy to be on.
And boxing was not your first career.
No. you know, I was in school full-time, and I started a nail salon, so I had my own business. I never wanted to work for anybody. I was always an entrepreneur, so... my first business was a nail salon.
And what made you decide to pick up your father's gloves?
Well, you know, it's funny because I didn't really say, oh, I think I want to follow in my father's footsteps. Obviously, knowing that my father was a professional fighter, I never actually had the urge to want to box until I saw women's boxing for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't something that I thought was even, you know, something I was able to do until I saw it. So as soon as I saw it, something within me just sparked, and I just wanted to go for it, so I did.
And you know better than I that some people don't believe women's boxing is legitimate, and some people are always going to believe that your decision to do this was simply an attempt to cash in on your dad's name.
You know, it's so funny because I haven't heard that statement made in such a long time. you know, I did hear that maybe 12 years ago when I first started boxing, but now... Excuse me. Now being 24-0 with five titles and staying in the sport for as long as I did, you know, I haven't really heard that anymore.
And you did an awful lot to legitimize the sport.
You know, it's never been my concern and to try to legitimize the sport. Obviously, when you're working very hard and you're focused, your last concern is to worry about what people have to say. You know, it's very serious. It's a dangerous sport. And, you know, I have a lot of fans, so I really don't worry about the ones that aren't into it or don't watch it because they don't have to and they have a right to feel the way they feel.
How did your dad react when he found out you were going to do this?
My father wasn't happy. He'd rather me not box, and, you know, he doesn't like to see women fighting, women getting hit, especially his own daughter. So he was concerned and tried to talk me out of it indirectly. It obviously didn't work. And since then, he's very proud of what I've accomplished, and, you know, he's happy that I never did get hurt seriously.
Did he ever give you any tips?
Of course. I mean, my father, you know, most fighters will give you the tips that work best for them, and his thing was always to have a very fast jab. So, you know, he had the best jab in boxing, so he wanted to pass that along to me.
And most of us, if we go into the same business as our fathers, want to at least equal them. In the case of your father, he's called the greatest.
Well, you know, like I said in the beginning of this interview, I didn't go into it saying, ooh, I want to be like my father, and I've never gone about my career that way. My dad is the greatest, and I, for one, don't feel that it's possible to be as great as he was, and not just for me, but for anybody. So that's something that I never tried to attain. I'm very much like my father in the way that I love me, and I'm not trying to be him. I've just tried to be myself, and I think that that's what's helped me be able to survive, because once you start trying to be like your father or your parent, you can never really get out of it. So I've had to forge my own way, and it's never been an issue for me.
I know that you've been an active you've left the ring for good now?
You know, I always have my my wants to get back in there, but it's not something, you know, I'm not retired from boxing, but I don't have any plans right now to fight again.
But I know you're working actively to make sure that girls and young women have opportunities to get into, well, boxing or any other sport they may be interested in.
Yeah, well, not so much boxing, but I am on the council of the Women's Sports Foundation, which is Billie Jean King's foundation. And it's to get girls active in underserved communities and also to fight discrimination and give a voice to professional female athletes. So it's just it's a support system for anything that has to do with sport. And I think that sports is very important. I wish I would have been involved in sports as a child, and I wasn't, because it's just good for so many reasons. For one, just building relationships and discipline, keeping kids out of trouble off the street, especially in the underserved communities. And also, you know, I'm involved with the Governor's Council on Physical Fitness here in California, which is also a great program that's helping to promote keeping Californians active and keeping kids active. And it's encouraged doctors to prescribe exercise to their patients. So, you know, I'm really proud of that work, because I know it's so important, because we have this problem with obesity and kids being overweight here in California.
And I wonder if you think it's more of a challenge in these times when it seems like physical education is one of the things that gets cut when school budgets are under scrutiny.
Well, it definitely is a challenge, and that's really, really why all of these programs need to be put in place, because, you know, it's not happening in the schools, so it has to be provided somewhere, you know, somebody has to push for it. So I'm very happy to be involved with Schwarzenegger, and also Jake Seinfeld is real big, and you know who he is. He's real big on fitness. So some great people involved.
Let's get another caller on the line, and Cynthia is with us, calling from Sacramento.
Hi there.
Hi, Cynthia. You're on the air.
Well, hi there. I just had to call in. I've never done that before, but, you know, I absolutely am in the field that I am because of my dad. From in the late 50s, I was learning how to solder and learn the color code on resistors and building Heath kits with him in the basement. He was an electrical engineer and worked his way through college, going to night school and fixing radios in the daytime. And that was just amazing.
You're reminding me, I built some of the worst Heath kits ever.
Pardon?
I made a dog's breakfast out of more Heath kits than I can remember, but go ahead.
Tell you, Heath kits were a great, great thing. And then I had an opportunity after working for 7 years out of high school in flunky jobs to study biomedical engineering at the local community college. And I ended up teaching my dad transistor theory, because he had taught me vacuum tube theory. And I used to get on my bike and ride down to the vacuum tube place where you put the tubes in the tube tester machine, and then I'd come back and tell them which ones were good and which ones were bad.
Hmm. I wonder, Leila Ali, your conversations with your dad about boxing, the philosophy of the sport, what you can do and what you can't do, I wonder if you have some similar stories as Cynthia.
Well, you know, boxing is very different than it was when my father was fighting. So, you know, and my dad had a whole different approach to his career, you know, a whole different setup. So my dad hasn't really been involved in the business side of boxing. You know, when he shows up to my fights, he doesn't really even know what he's going to see because it's something that I do on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, I cannot say that I have.
Well, Josh Ammerman, let me bring you back into the conversation. One part of what Cynthia is talking about was her dad was, of course, had vacuum tube theory, and she taught him transistor theory. I wonder, given the evolution of technology, did you have the chance to teach your dad anything new?
It's a fascinating thing that you bring up. One of the things I think my father was most excited about when he, you know, medicine is always moving forward,
mm-hmm.
and no one can be a master of everything, was that there are things that I do that certainly he did not do. And I think I know he was looking forward to the opportunity to let me take those things over. We had many conversations about this, that he was going to scale some things back because, quote unquote, the younger guys, being me, were here and ready to do those things. And it led to some really great dinner table conversation.
Cynthia, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
And Leila Ali, I have to confess, I don't know if you have children, but if you do, would you be upset or interested if they had decided to follow you and your father into sports or maybe even into the ring?
I have one son. He's 9 months old, and I'm not going to guide him to box. And, you know, his father was a professional football player, so I already know he's going to have pressure on him coming from that sport, you know, from his dad.
Sure.
I'd rather him play football than box.
It's probably safer.
Well, both sports are a little crazy if you ask me, but I mean, I with my father, I know that, you know, he's going to do whatever, you know, makes him happy, so I'm going to support him either way.
Well, Leila Ali, we thank you for your time today. We know you're extremely busy, and we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us about this.
Thanks for having me on.
Leila Ali, a former professional boxer. I guess she still says she's not quite yet retired. Now on the board of the Women's Sports Foundation and the California Governor's Council on Physical Fitness, with us by phone from her home in California. Here's an email from Renee in Chelsea, Michigan. My father taught political theory at a mid-sized Midwestern university. And so do I. I did everything to sidestep his footsteps and his father's and his grandfather's footsteps in academia. But here I am. I majored in theater as I could not get enough credits in political science, worked professionally in community theater, was politically active, and somehow ended up in graduate school to study political theory. I do not remember making the decision to go to graduate school. There was no pressure from my parents to go into education, aside from the assumption that I would go to a small liberal arts school. My father died in 1998. We are connected and very much alike, and I am finally grateful for that. And I wonder, Josh, did you ever feel like this was some sort of genetic vortex that you were being pulled into?
I'm accused of that on a regular basis. No, my father never pushed me to become a neurosurgeon. I have no doubt that he was extraordinarily happy about the fact that my brother and I fought along, but never pushed me. I do joke about that with patients. It's a genetic disorder among Ammerman males. But it was my decision all the way through.
Now let's see if we can go to Jacksonville, Florida, and talk to Earl, who's on the phone.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Well, I'm an attorney, and my late father was really a giant in his profession here locally. He was the first black member of the Jacksonville Bar in the 60s, represented Martin Luther King in Florida. And so growing up, you know, I really felt that my dad was involved in something much larger than him, seeing his response to the response of people to him. I thought, you know, gosh, this guy really does well for people, and they respond. So I became a lawyer primarily for that reason. What I learned quickly, though, over the years is that, you know, the times have definitely changed. The issues that he was involved in primarily in civil rights don't exist or aren't the same anymore. But I think I still found some of the gratification that he experienced.
And do you run across people? Of course, I would think you do, who knew your dad and worked with him.
All the time, Neil, almost on a daily basis, I run into attorneys and former clients and judges, and that's here locally in Jacksonville and elsewhere. You know, there was a time when I thought that, you know, I'm not going to return to Jacksonville. I'll stay in Tampa after law school. But the older I got, the more I realized what a benefit and what an honor it would be to practice in his hometown where he practiced law.
And I take it, it's almost like you feel he had a mission and you are continuing it.
Well, I appreciate that. He was very involved in public service, sat on the city council here in Jacksonville for nearly 3 decades, and that passion for public service, I think, has certainly transferred to me, and I'm very involved in the community.
And do you ever, sometime at night, alone by yourself, sit back and think of roads not taken?
Had it not been for math, I would have been architect.
Well,
but I'll tell you something interesting. Dad, in law school or in undergrad at Howard, took acting classes with Roxy Roker from the Jeffersons.
Yeah.
So he may just have likely become an actor, and who knows? That could have been Lenny Kravitz.
Well, there you go, Earl. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're talking today about following in your father's footsteps. Stay with us. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Siri's on the line. Siri with us from Ann Arbor.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead,
Yes, I practiced law with my father for many years before making a career change into social work. And I wanted to just comment on how competition can complicate the father-daughter relationship.
Go ahead.
Well, my dad was a very successful trial lawyer. He's 82 now and retired. And, you know, trial lawyers like to win. He was so proud of my accomplishments, but I think on some level he also was threatened when I would, you know, do something professionally that was very accomplished.
And you felt the competition. How did it manifest? Did he say, young lady?
You know, my dad was always very upfront with his feelings. His nose would be out of joint, you know, and he would joke about it, but I could tell, you know, it was something that sort of nagged at him.
And was there a moment when you realized, look, this isn't working, I need to do something else?
Well, yes, there was, but it wasn't because of my dad or our relationship or working in the family business. I just felt I was better suited to helping people in another way. And it was interesting as I went through social work training how much insight I got into the complications of family businesses and the dynamics and then the other siblings who can envy a special relationship that you have with the parent.
Here's an email just on that point from Jennifer in Dedham, Massachusetts. My sisters and I were all born in the mid-70s. Both my sisters have followed in my father's footsteps, and I have not. This is difficult as I don't feel part of the family, but I'm happier doing what makes me happy. My sisters work extremely hard. They have to work this hard to prove that they deserve the same success as my dad. I feel very proud of them, even though I took a different path. And it sounds like you have some perspective on that.
Yes, I do. And I just wanted to comment that for all the special challenges that working in a family business present, the rewards are so tremendous. To have something that special to share with your parent, and we still get pleasure out of talking law.
Siri, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I wonder, Josh Ammerman, as we talk about you and your family, do you have a son?
I have a son and a daughter.
And do you think that they might be interested in being neurosurgeons someday?
My son spends a lot of time sitting downstairs looking at films with me on the computer and likes to talk about them. I think it's more likely that he's going to be a train conductor than a neurosurgeon.
Well, but, as we know, Thomas does not need a lot of help.
Thomas is a hero in my son's eyes. But if Hayden wants to become a neurosurgeon, I'd be thrilled, but I would never push him for the same reasons that my father never pushed me. It's your life.
Let me ask you this. Have you bought them that Operation game?
Yes. in full disclosure, I have.
Here's an email we have from Genevieve in Denver, Colorado. I did not follow in my father's footsteps. He saw himself as an intellectual in all literary matters. It was clear that there was no room in the family for someone else to be successful in that arena. Without constant criticism from him, I became a physicist. Years after his death, I published poetry every day on a blog, which is enjoyed by my readership. Another commentary on the possibilities and the pitfalls of competition. Josh Ammerman, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Neil.
Josh Ammerman joined us here in Studio 3A. He's a neurosurgeon at Washington Neurological Associates. His father and grandfather were neurosurgeons, too. So is his brother. Coming up next, best worst movie. What makes a really terrible movie? Well, great. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.